KUOW is the record. Good to have you along here. I'm Bill Radke. In 1974, a little girl came to America from southern India. Her immigration here came out of a family hardship, and sometimes the girl's life felt disconnected from her home, from her parents. Sometimes she was insecure, racially bullied. In other words, Padma Lakshmi was human. But man, by the reaction she got when she was seen at Pike Place Market through a telephoto lens, you'd think a goddess had descended. Lakshmi was the host, is the host of the reality TV food show Top Chef, and she is worldly and impossibly beautiful and just not quite like you and me. But now her, she's written a memoir that Padma sort of fills the gap between the then and the now and between you and the rest of us. It's called Love, Loss, and What We Ate. We'll welcome you to KUOW and to Seattle.
Thank you, Bill. I'm so happy to be in Seattle because you're right. When I was here last, I lived walking distance from Pike Place, and I love that market. And I would go there, and because we weren't supposed to tell anybody we were in town filming, people would ask to take pictures with me, and I couldn't. And usually, unless I'm with my daughter, I always take pictures with fans of the show or, you know, sign autographs or whatever. And I felt so badly because I couldn't do that. But I'm so happy to be here. And tonight, I'm going to be at Town Hall, and I would be happy to take pictures with everybody and sign anything they want. And I love this city. It's, you know, I never came here before I had to film Top Chef, and I was so lucky that I did get to see what it's like. I was here in a very beautiful time in a bit later in spring than now. It was so verdant and so beautiful, and the flowers were out, and it was just glorious. And I had one friend who's still one of my best friends named Susan Roxborough here, and she took me everywhere, and it's such a child-friendly city. We went on the big wheel the day it was inaugurated.
Oh, really?
My daughter still talks about that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she's with Sasquatch Books.
Yeah,
right? Or was
she
at least.
Yes,
she showed
is.
You around?
Yeah.
So
she's
people,
a really good friend of mine.
I have been asked, then I have to say, what does she eat in Seattle? That was one of the top things. Do you just do room service, or do you like always go to Cafe Campagna or always go to whatever? Do you have certain go-tos in Seattle when you
arrive? Well, when I was here, I was lucky. I actually wasn't staying in a hotel. I got to have a corporate apartment. Until then, I was actually setting up conference tables against a wall in whatever hotel room I was at with a hot plate, washing pots and pans in the bathtub because I have a small child and I didn't want her to have room service for 6 weeks because you don't know how many people are touching that plate of food. And so we used to cook everything from spaghetti to eggs to grilled cheese in a hotel room. But thankfully in Seattle, we had a corporate apartment. And so I had a full kitchen and I would go to Pike Place Market, buy this glorious seafood and come back and make something, you know, for my crew with it or just me and my little girl. Then I, you know, I went to Melrose Market.
Uh-huh. And Capitol Hill.
Oh, you know, there's that. Yes. And there's also that cheese shop, The Cow and the Kid.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think.
Calf
and the Kid.
Yes.
Calf and the Kid is responsible for most of the weight I gained while in Seattle. I can't even blame the chefs on the show. I loved it here. I mean, there's so much to do and we did it all. And I had a wonderful time. It's just such a scenic, cozy, beautiful city.
Well, I do want to ask you about Seattle more later on. I understand the Pacific Science Center told you that you're a super taster, which I'd like to find out about. But regarding the book, talking with the Top Chef host, Padma Lakshmi, most people, when they think of you, they think visuals. They think maybe beauty, modeling, the food that you can, you can't taste it. It's because you don't have to see it on TV. So visuals is important. People notice your ethnicity. You wrote about that. But for somebody who we think of so visually, I noticed there's not a single photo in this book. Was there an intention behind that?
Yeah. I mean, I had published a couple of cookbooks before this book and, you know, I just thought that in the next phase of my career, I wanted to not only be a cookbook writer, but just be a writer.
Yeah.
And I was very daunted about writing this book. It was supposed to be a book about healthy eating, but more of a prescriptive book of nonfiction prose, you know, rather than it was supposed to have recipes, but it was always supposed to be without pictures. And in the writing of it, I just kept going deeper and deeper. And, you know, I thought if I want to do something more meaningful, then what about just starting now? And that's what I tried to do. I tried to, you know, write about what I knew intimately. That's what every good writer will tell you to do when you're starting out. And I wanted to look at some issues that I had never gotten to speak about publicly just because it wasn't applicable to what I did on TV. You know, when you see me on Top Chef, it's such a narrow, specific role that I'm playing. And I have to do that to do my job effectively as a host and judge. And I'm very proud of Top Chef and everything that we've achieved in these 13 seasons. You know, Tom, Gail, hundreds of people who've worked hard on this show over the years, my executive producers, my field producers, my culinary producers. I think we've literally changed the conversation about food in our culture. And
why do you say that? How have you changed the conversation about food?
I think people are much more aware of the food they eat, about quality ingredients, about where that food comes from. You know, when I live in New York and I'm hailing a cab on the corner, I have young teenage girls and boys come up to me and say, you know, last weekend at a sleepover, we had an amuse-bouche contest. Now, to have a 12-year-old know what an amuse-bouche is, mm-hmm. and to make an amuse-bouche herself or himself is a great thing, because I think the earlier you can get your children involved in cooking and in the food that they eat, the greater the chance of giving them the gift of good food and good nutrition for long after you're around to help them navigate that world.
So how did your book go so far beyond food? I mean, it's very personal.
It
feels confessional. Mm-hmm. What do you want your readers and our listeners right now, what do you want them to take?
Well, I think, you know, the book is at its core about family, about forgiveness. It is a food memoir, so yeah. There's tons of food in it. And it is also a tribute to the many people who have made me who I am and who I love. My grandmother, my mother, you know, my mother came to this country as an adult alone and just made a new life for us by herself. I stayed back in India, and back in India, all of my cousins and uncles and aunts, and especially my grandmother, really shaped who I was as well, who taught me to cook, who taught me to read, who taught me to do my multiplication tables, who taught me to get lice out of my hair, you know, mm-hmm. all of these things. And I shuttled between these very different environments in two very different countries across the world. I was a latchkey kid in New York City in the 70s and early 80s, and I lived in a two-room apartment with 8 or 10 people living there at any given moment in my grandmother's home. And both these environments and cultures really informed who I am as a person, but also what I do on Top Chef. You know, even in going to India from, say, Los Angeles, when we moved there when I was in high school from the West Coast, you had to stop in Tokyo and Singapore and have a layover of 2 days and one night. And when I did that at 16, it gave me, an incredible sense of independence alone. I did that. But also, it allowed me to sample the foods in that part. And Singapore is a wonderful food city. There's all this Pan-Asian food that bumps up against each other. And it's a wonderful way to really travel the world with your fork. And I think my whole life history, I have done that. I've been fortunate enough to do that, you know, as a model as well, or as an actress. I got to spend 3 months in Cuba at a time nobody, no American certainly was going there. And so I wanted to pay homage to the fact that, you know, a lot of times we really feel like an outsider. You don't have to be an immigrant. You don't have to be a woman. You don't have to feel like everyone else is more experienced and skilled at the job you're now being asked to do at the table to feel like an outsider. I think we all feel like that at some point in our lives. And I know that people see me in a certain light, you know, either in pictures, in photographs in magazines or on Top Chef. And I guess I was just yearning for people to see the rest of me.
So that outsiderness, does that get at why you also wrote about sexism and racism and insecurity and you know, being bullied and mistakes that
yes.
you've made?
Yes, I wanted to write. I couldn't write about one aspect of my life and leave the other aspects of it out. I thought that wouldn't be honest. It wouldn't be truthful. And I tried to write a book that was those things and a book that I would want to read, you know. And I have great respect for writers like Mary Carr or MFK Fisher and or Barbara Kingsolver or, you know, or Joan Didion or on and on. And so I wanted to write, you know, I'm not saying that I'm on their level by any means. This is my first book, really. But I wanted to use them as examples to write an honest book. And the only thing I knew well was my own experience.
I'd like to talk a little more about India, about food, about the Northwest. Can we do that in a few minutes?
Sure.
We're talking with the author of Love, Loss, and What We Ate, Top Chef host Padma Lakshmi, who was here in 2012 with Top Chef Seattle. And we talked about 1,000 things off the microphone, Padma. But I did tell listeners, I promised you would tell the story of finding out in Seattle that you're a super taster. Will you briefly tell us what the heck that means?
Sure. The reason I do what I do for a living is because I can taste any dish and reproduce that taste in my own kitchen. I'm sort of like a bloodhound. I can figure out what is in something and taste really subtle flavors. And I never knew why. I had heard the term super taster, but I didn't know if it was an actual thing.
Yeah.
And when we were filming here at the Seattle Science Center, my daughter and I had a break and I showed her all the beautiful animals that you guys have there. And we went into the kids section and there was this wonderful Italian scientist behind a counter. And it said, you know your taste buds. And mm-hmm. So Krishna and I went over there and I said, you know, I've always been able to taste a lot. And what is a super taster? She said, let's find out if you are. And I said, oh, there's actually a test. And she explained to me that a super taster is someone who can pick up some flavors or notes, usually bitter notes, but not only, that other normal people can't. It's sort of like a dog who can hear whistles that us humans can't hear.
Yes.
And it's because those people have additional taste buds that the rest of the population doesn't have. And so it's a very simple TAB test. I took it and she said, yes, you are a super taster. I expected her to get a wand out and,
yes.
And you know, dot me
and
on the head.
Yeah.
But sadly, Krishna also had the test and she's not a super taster. So
oh.
She takes after her dad, I guess.
You agreed to talk a little bit about your daughter. You just mentioned Krishna because you were concerned enough about feeling like an outsider in California that for a while you changed your name. You went by Angelique or Angie for a while.
Yes.
And yet when it was time to name your daughter, you named her Krishna. And what went into that?
Well, I have been, it's weird to think he's not here, but I was very close to my grandfather, whose name is Krishnamurti, and he taught me the love of books. He played the role of father in my life. He took care of me for 2 years while my mother came to America, and again every summer, and certain years like third grade and fourth grade when I was sent back. So I was always his pet, his favorite, and I write about him a lot in the book. And so I knew none of my other cousins had named any child Krishna or Krishnamurti. And I knew that regardless of what her gender was, that I wanted to name her Krishna. And it's also, it is an Indian name, but it's a very common Indian name, but it's a name that most Westerners know because of the Beatles, you know, Hare Krishna, right. Krishna, Krishna, right? So, and it's so funny because in Sanskrit, Krishna means the dark one and Krishna is so fair.
And you talk about that too in the book, about the racism in India.
In India,
and skin color is very important.
Yes. I mean, look, I love my grandmother. She taught me how to cook. She taught me how to be a woman. She taught me how to take care of the house. She taught me so much that I still use every day. My grandmother was a feminist, a very early feminist, as was my mother. But I can remember when I was young, my grandmother would say, "Vella pohade, karuttu peduva," which in Tamil means don't go outside, you know, in the afternoon. You'll get black or you'll darken.
Right.
And so there's a lot of color prejudice even in India. You know, you're not supposed to be dark and there's so many fairness creams or bleaching creams. And, you know, you'll see ads for matrimonial matches. And the first word they'll always say is fair. Or if they can't get away with fair, they'll say dusky.
Dusky.
And if they can't get away with dusky, they'll say Swedish.
Yeah.
But those are kind of euphemisms for saying, look, our son or daughter isn't that light. Which I have to tell you, like I modeled in an era with Alec Weck. And now, you know, we have Lupita Nyong'o, who is so beautiful. And, you know, I think beauty comes in a lot of different colors. And I suffered from that also when I was here. My skin, to me, felt a lot of times like a huge handicap. And what's weird is that my daughter now, you know, wants to, you know, she gravitates toward people who are brown, you know, probably because half her family is brown. But
you were called Black Giraffe when you were bullied as a kid.
Yes,
you heard the N-word.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Now, you said Krishna is lighter, but I just find, to finish the thought, I just wonder what you imagine her, how much of an outsider, I mean, she's now she's of privilege. I mean, she's going to lead a very different life from you.
Definitely.
But what do you imagine for your daughter?
I don't think, yes, you're right. Krishna is living in a different universe than I could ever hope to live in, and for all sorts of reasons. And, you know, she's also a child of New York City. She walks to school, and in her school, which is very progressive, there are lots of different ethnicities. That was important to me. And so she won't have that. But there will be. Everybody feels like an outsider at some point in their lives. I don't care who you are. And I'm sure that she will feel like that. And by the way, it's good for her to feel like that. Because, you know, if you always have it easy, it doesn't build character. And I think, you know, to answer your question from a little while ago, I wanted to write about some of the difficult things that happened to me, even some of the embarrassing things that happened to me or the painful things that happened to me, because those struggles also make me who I am today. They also make me resilient. They make me have much more empathy for people that I may not have had earlier. And I want Krishna, Krishna is a very charismatic, beautiful little girl who's funny and smart. But my job as Krishna's mother and the rest of her family's job is to make her kind, is to make her beware of her fellow human beings and use the privilege that she has in a positive way.
We just have a couple of minutes, unfortunately, left with Padma Lakshmi. Number one, as I was telling you off air, next time you say you always go to an Indian grocery.
Oh, yeah.
And now you know that maybe Redmond next time, go a little east of Seattle, because we have Washington State's got the fastest growing Indian population in America, and one out of 10 people in Redmond is of Indian descent.
I'm so happy to hear that. In fact, I went to that grocery store, I think it was in Redmond, and, you know, I always find Indian groceries the first thing when I get to city, because left to myself, I would eat lentils and rice every day, all day. And I remember this young woman who was probably just in her early 30s come up to me, beautiful, vivacious woman, saying, you know, it's so nice to meet you. It's so nice to see you in Seattle. We don't often see people who look like us on TV, especially Indian women. And that was really wonderful to hear. And I said, oh, what do you do? And she said, well, I'm an engineer at Microsoft. And immediately my Indian instincts came back to me. And I didn't ask her for her phone number. But when I got in the car, I regretted not going out on a limb and asking her for her phone number, because I thought she would be a beautiful match for one of my cousins who was single at the time. He is very happily engaged to a wonderful woman named Hope now. But it tells you how hard it is to let go of those old Indian strings.
Yes, indeed. Yes, that's the connection. There's a Microsoft campus, you know, of Hyderabad. And
yes.
We'll have to talk more about that someday.
I would love to.
Padma Lakshmi, the author of Love, Loss, and What We Ate. You're at Town Hall in Seattle.
Yes, I am. And I would love for everyone to come out. I'd love to meet all of you, because I wasn't able to shake your hand or sign anything or take a picture. And I will sign everything and take every picture. And
You feel a little guilty about that.
I do feel guilty about that, because it's weird. It's weird for you to be staring at me at the Whole Foods or at Pike Place, and I'm going to be like, I'm sorry, I can't take a picture of you with you. And you say, are you shooting Top Chef here? And I look you in the face and say, I can't answer that, like I'm in some witness protection program.
You know what? There's no hard feelings. I absolve you. So
I
hope this is the beginning of your healing about that.
Thank you.
So finally, you were just starting to say, though,
Town Hall at 7:30 tonight. Okay. And I look forward to meeting all those Indian people who are now populating Seattle and everyone else.
Padma Lakshmi, Love, Loss, and What We Ate. Nice to meet you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Bill.
KUOW's The Record.